when you know the box, it's a lot easier to think outside of it. And that's something I say that to clients in every meeting and every screening and everything.
Hi, I'm Joel Pilger, and you're listening to episode 75 of the RevThinking Podcast. Today, my guest is Justin Barnes at Versus, and our topic is getting outside the box.
Welcome to RevThinking, the podcast for creative entrepreneurs who know the best way to deal with the future is to create it. This is the conversation between creative leaders and consultants, discussing what it really takes to run a thriving creative business.
Hello, it's Joel, and greetings from New York City. Yes, I'm back again. It's good to be back in New York, as always. I am today being joined by Mr. Justin Barnes. Now, Justin leads Versus, a studio here in Manhattan. Justin was kind enough to come down to Midtown and meet me at Buttons, my favorite studio here, audio house, kind enough to let us sit down and use their facility to record a podcast. Again, thank you, Rich and team at Buttons, for being such gracious hosts. Now, Justin is the executive creative director and founding partner of Versus. Versus has several partners. He's the founder. He and his wife are our partners in the business, as well as several other individuals. But Justin is one of my favorite people. When I come to New York, he's one of these people that I love to see. I was here 2 weeks ago, and we had dinner. And over dinner with him and his partner, Rob, not only did we have a great conversation and drink, I have no idea how many Montenegros after dinner. I lost count at maybe 9 or 12 or something. But we agreed that we should have Justin on the podcast. He was kind enough at the end of dinner, after picking my brain for several hours, he said, "Man, how can I help you?" And I said, "Dude, come be on the RevThinking podcast." And he said, "Absolutely. Just say when." And this is that session. So we sit down to talk about Versus and his journey. This is like another in our Profile of the Creative Entrepreneur series. And I love Justin's story because I think a lot of owners out there wonder, what's it like running a shop right in the heart of Manhattan? Is it easier? Is it harder? Is it more intense? Is it more expensive? I know I've always heard this familiar narrative from studios outside New York that they love to say, oh, well, we're not in New York where you have to pay New York prices and you have to deal with all of this, that, and the other. But I not only asked Justin about those questions, is that true? But more importantly, what are the advantages for being based right in Manhattan? And he shares quite candidly his perspective on what makes Versus tick, his philosophy for how he runs his business and how he operates as a creative. And I'm always thankful when I have a creative entrepreneur on the show that is so willing to be honest and open and share his or her thoughts about what makes him tick, but also what makes his business successful. I'm calling this episode Getting Outside the Box because there's a phrase that Justin uses quite often in the episode about this whole, in order to get outside the box, you have to do certain things. And I thought it's a really great title for this episode because it even describes the way he and his business partners do business. All right, that's enough of my introduction. I'm going to let the conversation between me and Justin tell the rest of the story. So enjoy this conversation between me and Justin Barnes.
Dude, when did Versus get started?
I started Versus with our managing director, Samantha, about 6 years ago now.
And were you guys together at the time?
We were, yeah. So we were running this sort of big motion graphics VFX company that I helped start with a really big edit house. And we were running that. I was doing like the creative and the art director for the whole thing. And she was running sort of the office, the day-to-day, and managing sort of the business. And it was attached to an edit house, which of course has all of its problems. But I eventually got us fired from there and my entire team. Which was great.
So wait, not just you, not just Samantha, but other people were fired because of your actions.
It was run so poorly, and it was embarrassing, and just the level of experience of the people running it, I think, were just not there. I don't know. So the clients started reaching out to sort of me directly, and I wasn't like stealing the work, but I guess maybe they thought that I was.
Okay,
so one day they were just sort of like, you're fired. They fired the entire team behind me and then Samantha right behind there. And then we all just went to the bar across the street and it was like, ah, we're out. Thank God.
and when was the actual genesis of Versus? Was it in that at that bar?
Well, how it started from there was, it was like, all right, what do we do now? And I'm like, well, I can freelance anywhere. So I made like 3 calls and the next day I was freelancing. So I freelanced around for a few months and always sort of kept that idea in the back of my head. Like, you know, I'd love to start something and do it right. And the more I freelanced at these bigger studios, the more it became apparent that I needed to do it right. Like just seeing how they were run was unbelievable, to be honest.
Okay, no, that's actually a really interesting story because I've heard many, many times over the freelancer who has an idea and a notion of maybe starting a shop of his or her own someday. Yeah. And through freelancing for different shops, they develop an opinion called, wow, if I did it, now that I see how this place is run, you know, no offense, I would do it totally differently. I would do it this way instead of that way.
Right.
And then they start to get this this drive called, I think I should do this. Is that part of kind of what I'm hearing?
It is, yeah. But I think you have to do it for the right reasons. Just saying, like, I can do it better and I want to keep the money is definitely not the right reasons. I think for me, the right reasons were, like, to be honest, I mean, it sounds crazy, but they were, like, more client-focused. Like, I would feel bad for the clients having to sort of, like, deal with just this sort of inefficiency and people not caring about their jobs and producers rolling over and just getting started or new artists coming in and trying to pick up the pieces for a job. And I was like, wow, you know, these clients aren't really being served. And it's a shame because the creative is not being served ever on these jobs. And I'm seeing good ideas go out the window and or not just being like fulfilled to like what they truly could be. And no one just sort of pushing the limits of the creative because, you know, they're only there for a little bit or they don't care or they're jaded. I would see in other studios artists not being allowed to talk to each other. Like there's an artist on the advertising side and CG is not allowed to talk to the guys working on broadcast and motion graphics. Blew my mind. Mm-hmm. And just a lot of that, like everything was sort of just set up in its own sort of little area and it wasn't collaborative. I know you hate that word and I do too, but like it wasn't like a team working towards like one goal of making really great work and really making the client happy and building a partnership. So I worked at this one place and I said, like, this is crazy. They wanted me to come in and be the creative director. I thought, like, you know, it's a great opportunity, but I'm going to go out and do it myself. And that's where the name Versus comes from. We're Versus, that entire model right there. And, you know, it's a name. It's our statement is what we say. Really, that statement's to, you know, clients, to the industry, and, you know, to ourselves, to promise to ourselves.
And what are the two sides of, like, what versus what?
I mean, we're versus this old sort of model of like, you know, where bottom line is ahead of like the creative, the top creative, we say. I mean, it's just versus this inefficient model of like, I don't know, it's hard to describe, just things not working the right way. Of just
like old school people, versus new school, the old
way
versus the new way.
It's old school versus the new way, but I mean, it goes deeper than that. I mean, for us, it's really about, you know, a team effort where everyone's involved from the beginning. We never pitch an idea. We're not an agency where we pitch an idea and then like, oh, the idea is sold through. We just shot it. Let's find an editor. Like our editor's there from the beginning, from the concept of the idea, like all the way through. So are the directors, so are the art directors, the writers, the creatives, everyone. Everyone's from start to finish the exact same team. And I think that's the most important thing you can do for a creative idea is just not bring in other people here and there and try and like fill the gaps because, you know, you've got a bottom line to hit.
Well, I mean, we'll probably get into that later because operating that way, it in some ways is less efficient, right? Like there's a cost to it.
True. Good point. Yes.
Yeah. No, but I mean, but everything's trade-offs, right, in business. And I think there's some distinct advantages that you've realized by working that way. But before we get into that, I'm curious to hear when the moment came that you and your partners. And we should list off who those partners are. What was that defining moment of, as Tim and I always ask, was it fame? Was it fortune? Was it freedom?
Well, so yeah, to going back. So Samantha and I started the company and we literally had no clients. We had nothing. We rented a space in this really budget WeWork that was like a Canal Street version of a WeWork that we found. It was even cheaper. We shared the desk together in a huge room full of all these people. And we sort of just sat there and I was like, all right, well, now what? Now what we do? So we're like, well, let's get a phone. So we went to the Verizon store, got like a little tiny, the cheapest cell phone they had, and got our business number lined up, which we still have to this day. And then brought it there. And I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to start reaching out to people that I know and start like telling them what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. And then I did. And sort of Samantha started like running, because she handles all the business side of everything. She started running projections on numbers. And I was like, you're getting ahead of yourself, but whatever, to do it.
Right. God bless
her. Like, yeah, do that or like nothing. So she was doing research like on clients and like and doing numbers and getting all the sort of business aspect of everything running. I'm reaching out to clients. And we started getting work. I mean, I remember people would call the cell phone and I would put on like sounds of The Office on YouTube. So it sounded like we were like a legit place.
Really? I love that. That's fantastic.
And I may or may have not grabbed some photos from like some other studio overseas and put them on the website to make it look like we had a bigger space. I don't know. You know, it was all sort of projecting this image that we were bigger.
The mother of invention.
Yeah. It's like, it's because I knew we could handle the work and do the work. I just, you know, convincing other people that we're not just two people sitting at a desk. And so it's like, can we come by the office? And I'm like, no, we're too busy. I'll come to you.
Right, of course.
So from there, we got a couple clients. And I was like, oh, so literally in about 2 months, we moved to a bigger office, which was like on the floor above, a little more private. And then 3 months later, they kicked us out like right at Christmas because some big company wanted to come in and take over that space plus the other one. So January.
So when you say kicked out, you mean basically kicked out?
You have to leave next week, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So we said, oh wow, okay. So we packed up everything, brought it home, which wasn't, everything is two computers and like a few other things. And then found another space and were there for a few years, not years, months, and then moved to another space that we were at for like a year and a half.
And you're located where now?
And now, so from there, we started doing a lot of work in the space that we were at before we were at now, which was on Broadway and 20th. And we started like really doing a lot of work and really building a lot of momentum. And I think there got to a point when we sort of like you're in the seven figures and it's like a year and I'm doing most of the work. We have a few freelancers and it's just two people running. It was 23 hours a day. It was unbelievable. But you know, we loved it and we were really, really, really going for it. It just got to a point where I was like, we're looking at each other like, there's no way we can do this. I mean, we really can't. Like, and just keep this growing. If it grows any bigger, we'll die.
So I'm curious to unpack the little word you said right there, that you were saying, despite working 23 out of 24 hours a day, we loved it.
Yeah.
Why did you love it?
I still love it. All I want to do is work. It's like my, you know, it's on my off days, I just like make things and try and be creative and be inspired. And I think that's kind of crucial, something that you make more than just your job or your business. Like, this is like my life. It's my everything. It's sort of, you know, just being creative and making things. So for me, it's not work when it's like, you know, we would work all day and talk to clients and work on some of the jobs and maybe have a session here and there. And then at night, we would just work on the other stuff, like work on, you know, the other projects that we would just sort of schedule in a way that I could like do a night shift for myself. And I still do that to this day. But I mean, I like that. I love it.
Right.
So it got to a point where like, okay, it's a little too crazy. It's too tough to manage. I mean, there's a lot to running a business. You know, you start a business because you want to be creative and then all you do is the business part of it and the creative starts to go away. And that's when I think you got to say, okay, now I have to reevaluate and I need to be able to stay on the creative side. What can we do?
Yes.
So we brought in, you know, we talked about bringing in some partners and I think our decision in that was partners over hires was I really can't ask someone to do what I'm doing here without giving them a piece of the pie. And that's still true to this day. I mean, what I would want to ask them from somebody is like your entire life into the company. And like, that's it. So I know that's a lot to ask and it sounds crazy, but you know, that's the only way to do it.
And how many partners are now?
So we brought in two partners, Rob Myers and John Levy. Both came from the same company. And Rob Myers was the EP running the whole part of the company, and John was the head of the sales for running the company. So they've already worked together. I've known them. It was sort of a perfect fit to kind of bring both of them in, and we did. And we brought them in and just said, like, here's what we're doing. Here's what we're about. Here's, you know, what I want to do. And they were like, yeah, this is exactly what we want to do as well. And we did it. And they came in and we started growing. And we, you know, a year later, we moved to a bigger space. And that was not for any reason, but there was just more work. We weren't just sort of saying, like, new partners, let's do $1 million build out. We've never been that way. We're very, very organic and grow very slow on purpose, so we have a really solid foundation.
In other words, you're building with cash, not with debt.
Yeah, we've never had debt in the company ever once, and we never will. And we only operate on just what we have. We don't, like, go out and take big loans because we're taking a big chance. We're very smart about sort of how we do it.
I'm kind of curious to hear your thoughts on this because I've definitely known through the decades a lot of facilities that have come and gone, especially here in New York. And we've all heard the expression, oh, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
And I've always resisted that. And of course, I don't ever encourage my clients to build it and they will come. And I hear that in you as well, that you have this, I think, intention of, if we just hustle and we go out and win jobs and we get busy, we'll build it as we go rather than, oh, let's go out and take on some big debt and make something that the market hopefully needs, that you've just been able to actually figure it out as you go.
Yeah.
Has that been your mentality?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you do need sort of a nice office space. I think that is important. I used to think it wasn't that important, but now that we have one, I think it is for the clients and this sort of to project your image when they walk in there. This is like a nice place and it's real, but it doesn't need to be much. I mean, we'd only have two sort of big edit suites or Color or Flame, whatever they're going to be that day. And then an area for everyone to work and client area. But like, that's all you kind of really need. I think, you know, we set out to be a company of 13 people. Rob, John, and myself talked about when we were sort of saying, where do we want to be? And that's where we are. I mean, we hover around that number. We build up for projects. We go down when it's a little bit slower, but to us, that we don't really want to be any bigger than that. You don't need to be. It becomes, I think you start to lose money and you lose focus when you get too big.
And just having the space, and by the way, your space is really cool. It's like, it's kind of what exactly I would do as well. So
yeah.
Every time I walk in, I'm like, ah, this fits like a glove. Most people in the industry that are not in a major city like New York would, like you said, say, oh, we don't really need a space that's nice for clients and so forth, because they really don't have clients visiting very frequently. Why is that different in your world? Is that because of the types of clients that you work with, or is it New York? Or
I think it's because we work with such a variety of clients. We have agencies come into our office that don't have an office, and they're doing really well, and they have a bunch of clients, and they just use sort of our office. For us, you know, we need a place that we can invite clients to, and then that space honestly reflects a little bit of who we are as well, and why we like built it out in really a nice way and make it feel just really energetic. I think it's because that's who we are and it's a reflection on us. You know, you can do it without a space for sure, but when you want to get to the next level, which is like you need to have sort of a nicer space, I think. You know, I don't know what that level is. It's, you know, four up from where I was, but I don't know now.
Yeah, it's different. It's different for everybody.
Yeah.
But I can definitely put on like my client hat and walk into your space. And there is a certain, you know what I'm going to call it? I'm going to call it, you look like who you say you are.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Like there's a consistency of when I'm, because when I look at versus online, I look at the work and the people and the clients and all that sort of stuff. I say, oh, wow, these guys look really legit, incredible, really high level. And then when I walk into your space, it sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
And I like that there's not a dichotomy there. And if I was a client, that would create more confidence. Like, I'm in the right place.
Yeah.
These are the guys.
You know what's interesting that I learned when you're running a business is you start looking at the people you hire very differently. So when I would walk into a place like an audio house or a color house or something like that, like the vibe that I got there would be a big like sort of impact on me if I were to be returning there, to be honest. And so I started thinking like, well, what's going to happen when a client walks into our space? And I want them to be like, okay, yeah, this is a cool space. I want to come back here.
And what is the vibe that you strove to create when you built that space?
A place to just come in, feel really comfortable, and then like just get to work and be in a space that inspires you. Like, it's important to be inspired, like, with everything that you have, everything you're doing, all the time, I think. So I think our place is inspiring in a way. Like, they see everyone, like hustling and running around and talking and working together. And they're a part of it. You know, we don't want to like separate them. We're not throwing them away in the back for client services and all of that. It's like, you're up there with us and let's work together.
Mm-hmm. All right. So when you brought on the other two partners, that was obviously a big moment.
Yeah.
And you said that you guys were all very aligned. You're very much on the same page. And what I'm hearing from your story, you know, I always use these words, fame and fortune and freedom. Again, I almost have to unpack. Fortune just means let's benefit from the, let's we reward ourselves with our work, unlike just having a job where that's a very different situation.
Yeah.
Fame is more one of, I want to build a reputation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to create a name and stand for something and so forth out there. And then freedom is, hey, I want to live life on my own terms and do things my way.
Yeah, well, two out of three is not bad.
But. Yeah, I was going to say, was it a combination of of all three of those in some way?
I don't know. You know what it was? Honestly, for me, it was I really wanted to see versus potential, like live up to what it could be. For me, you know, the one thing that's like scares me is not living up to my potential. So it's like versus, you know, is a part of me. It's a part of Rob. It's a part of John and Samantha. You know, we needed to bring people in so Versus could live up to its potential. And I think that was it. The money's good, of course. The money was great before they got there as well. But it's, you know, obviously better now. We're growing the business exponentially. But money's never been like a really big motivator for me. I know it's such a dumb thing to say because everyone like says that. But to me, it's like, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say, because I know you hate this too, like keep your head down and just keep working and the money will come. It's completely not true. You've got to be very smart about how you deal with money in the business. But it's not the top priority. For me, the top priority is like almost spite driven. Like I'll show everyone like that Versus is how everything should be and it's going to be number one and we're going to put everybody out of business and we're going to be the best, you know, in a nice way.
What I'm hearing is I caught this turn of a phrase that I really liked, that someone once told me, you know, money is the currency of respect. And I thought, oh, okay. So winning the big project, the big budget,
I like that, yeah.
Right? In a way is dignifying your ability, your potential. I like that word.
Yeah.
And when you think of it in those terms, you realize, okay, no, it's not about the money, but in a roundabout way, it is, because the money is what enables you to realize your full potential.
Exactly. And take chances and, you know, go out on a limb for a creative project or invest in ourselves a little bit more. I think that's a big deal. And the fame, sure, I think we're not like, you know, I think we're not that well known, but we could sort of sneak under the radar. And I talked to a few studios like a month ago. And they're like, Versus, I've never heard of it. And I'm like, well, I've heard of your studio. And I know we just took the last two jobs that you were going after. You know, like in my head, I'm like, you've definitely heard of us. We took, you know, we won those jobs. I know exactly who you are. And, you know, and I pay attention to everybody out there because they're inspiring me. You know, I don't think I look up to other studios, but I look up to their work and who they are.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't mean to be any disrespect to any studios. Obviously, they're all amazing. But I think I'm focused on what Versus is doing, and I'm just continually inspired by all the work that's out there.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, I can remember, when did you come to the first cohort dinner that we did? I want to say it was a little over a year ago, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
And I'll never forget, because you were on one end of the table. Okay, and then there was another Justin from Alter Ego at the other end of the table.
But, yeah, great
but
guy.
But so people can understand this table was, what, 25 feet long?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then there's, what, 20 people
seated
around it. And you two guys were going at it. And, of course, you have one of those voices that just totally cuts and carries the room.
I'm passionate about it. And I think I have a really sort of strong opinion on everything. And I know that maybe comes through a little crass, but.
No, it didn't. I think it actually came through great. And I actually was very, I always love when people have opinions.
Yeah.
Right? The last thing we need is another wallflower that just says, yeah, whatever.
Right.
Right? And so when you have a room full of owners, these are all creative entrepreneurs, and you get one or two people that have this really strong opinion. And I think what I loved about you was we were hashing out things like legal and contracts and all this kind of stuff. And you had this bone to pick with, yeah, but.
Yeah.
Right. And you really wanted that point of view to be heard. And of course, Justin had, I think, an opposing view, but it made for, I would say, good theater.
Yeah. I mean, no, totally. And, you know, that's, when do you ever get to do that? That's why that's such an amazing thing, those dinners. Like, there's all these different sort of creative studio owners there, and we're all talking, and it's not like a competitive vibe whatsoever. So it's just, I don't know, maybe it's just like, there's nothing like it. So when you get into that moment and you're talking to everybody, it's like, you're juiced up, you know? It's passionate. Like, this is my life. This is everything. It's everyone's lives here. Like, talking about it, I think, shouldn't be just a simple conversation. It should be like yelling and like, it should be everything. You know, these are our lives. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. We get into it. No, I appreciate you saying that because, yeah, certainly the vibe is not at all competitive. And I think, too, you recognize in those rooms that, okay, sure, I'm here with 20 other people that are ostensibly competitors.
Yeah.
But for the 5% that might be a little awkward as we get to know each other and we spend an evening together, there's 95% of we have so much in common. And how can we process and make things better for all of us? And I know you're the kind of guy that you're gonna, you know that iron sharpens iron. You're gonna get in there and be like, hey, I love you, man. But I'm gonna also tomorrow I'm gonna pitch against you and beat your ass.
Yeah, I mean we're very
all in love
for sure. Yeah, no. I mean, that dinner was great. It was I was looking around and seeing all the different studios that of course I look up to and I think that are really great and doing really great work and they have something to say. It was really cool to meet all those people. The guys from Ant Food, who mm-hmm. we just did a job with, they killed it on. Like, you know, I finally got to meet them. I've always wanted to work with them. So that was my intro to call them.
Oh, perfect.
On this really big project that we're finishing and launching that I'm really proud of. I liked it a lot. It's a really good vibe and it's different. You know, you're there just to talk about like what's affecting all of us. And it's also nice to know that you're not alone. I think that's a big thing. You feel like you're on this island when you own a studio and it's like no one can understand. And then when everyone starts sort of saying the same things, you're like, okay, this feels good. Like this, you know, I'm not alone in this. We're all sort of facing these same things.
Well, we all see these facades called websites.
Yes, exactly.
Right? And we make lots of assumptions. Where you'll see a project that your competitor has done and you see how it turned out and you have that competitive thing inside of you, because I've been there, and it's like, damn it, those bastards, you know, how did they win that job and
totally.
How did they get that budget? And then when you actually talk to that owner and you actually unpack that, he might say something to you or she might say something to you like, you know what, be thankful you didn't get that job. Sure, it looks pretty, but that client was terrible.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, we got screwed on the payments, or I mean, you know, there's all kinds of stories. So these facades that we see almost keep us insulated, and then when we get all on a room and we have dinner, we realize, oh wow, you're struggling with that too, and mm-hmm. you're frustrated by that too, and you're excited about that as well, and that's always, I think, just really sweet when people get together and realize, hey, there is community here.
Totally. No, it's true. I mean, that facade's real. Like, I do say that. I see someone just did work with a client that we just took out to dinner last week, and I'm like, what's going on here? We took that guy out. Why is he not bringing that job to us?
Yeah, what the?
You know, or just there like tons of LinkedIn posts. I'm like, wow, they must be really killing it. You know, it's, you got to put up that facade.
Yeah.
It's a big part of sort of how we grew versus.
Right.
And we continue to this day, of course.
Right. You put the pictures of the European studio up there, right? And people were like, how the hell did Justin build that space so fast, right?
Yeah.
So
it got us into trouble once, but, you know.
I love that story, though. I won't say I've never done the same thing myself. One thing I was curious to hear about was New York.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I've loved coming here over the years. When I was running my studio, I would come here and do business development. Mm-hmm. I always loved being able to come to New York and come home with like a TV promo or rebrand or something like that. Because, you know, the old, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. But you being based here, I'm curious, like off the top of your head, do you feel like there's some very obvious pros and cons to being like right here in the city?
Yeah, I mean, tons of pros, of course, are just all the agencies are here, you know, most of them anyway. Yeah. And it's, you know, they don't want to go out of their way to do anything in an agency. So it's nice when you're close. I mean, we've gotten work because an agency is only 3 blocks away, strictly based on that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you're close, I can just come over, great. And I think it's just being in that central location, of course, the energy and all everything that comes with, you know, living in New York and being in New York and from New York. But
which is, by the way, is hard to overstate.
Yeah.
It's like it's easy to sort of rattle that off. But that is
a huge,
huge, huge thing.
I mean, if you're not hustling here, you're dead. Cons, of course, being that it's beyond expensive. I mean, the level of competition here is just insane. I mean, it truly is. It's, you know, not for the faint of heart. And just everything's tougher in New York. But, you know, I like that. Like, this is New York. I mean, any business is tough here, of course. I think, you know, for a creative studio, just there's a lot of opportunity here that you can't get anywhere else, and just more of it if you know where to look and how to look. That being said, we go out of New York to work a lot. You know, we have a really, really great agency partner that we really love in a different city that, you know, we fly them in for and put them in a hotel for, like, finishing and things like that. Brands that we work with are, you know, out of the city as well. Our head of sales, John, he says, and I know I'm going to, like, mess up how to say it, but, like, you know, you can't have all your eggs in one basket. You have to have little things out here in the broadcast world, in the agency world, in the brand world, in the publisher world, in et cetera world, in the film world. It's like, keep putting little pieces all out there, and they'll start firing at different times. And sort of that's how you stay consistent, because your agency work's going to be great for a few months, and then it'll die off, and then all of a sudden your broadcast work will pick up. And where's that been for the last few months? Now that's firing off for a little bit. And then some random thing that you had with making a documentary with Susan Sarandon, all of a sudden, like, that's giving you more work from something. It's just, as long as your sort of work is all over the place, I think, like, in different locations and different sort of places that it's coming from, like agencies or brands or whatever, I think you can stay consistent and be successful at it.
Well, I hear in you this tenacity, and then you used the word earlier of, I'm terrified to not live up to my potential. Was that the way you phrased
it? Yeah.
And man, I can very much relate to that myself personally, and I can see how that translates in the way that you operate your business and even how you perform as a creative. And in a way, I'm also hearing, being based in New York, it sounds like that as well, that for you, perhaps being based anywhere else in the world would be a step back from living up to your full potential.
Yeah, perhaps. You know, it does sound nice to sort of go to, like, a smaller city where there's just a few agencies, and you could be the big studio there and just do, you know, X amount of money and sort of be the king in there. But that's not living up. That's settling, I think. You know, living up to your potential means your best work is always ahead of you, no matter what. And I really think that we are. Like, we're not even close to our best work yet. And I don't even know I would even know if it's my best work, you know, or our best work. So you just keep going until one day you look back and, like, did I do it? I have no idea. But, you know.
What I love in what you're saying here is, right, is that you're a vocal kind of guy, and you're quick to speak your mind. But I hear an underlying optimism.
Yeah.
Like, you're really an optimist in a way.
Oh, absolutely.
That you're like, hey, my best work, my best years, they're all ahead of me.
Yeah, it is. It is. And the opportunities are just so aplenty right now. They're crazy. I mean, I see them everywhere. And I think that's what separates us. You know, when I hear agencies bringing work in-house, I love that. I love hearing that because, you know, agencies start an in-house production for one reason only, bottom line. You know, we start production because we love the craft, because we understand it, you know, and because we're doing it differently. That's why I know that I will always win over that. That's why I know that it's not going to work for you. And that's why I know your creatives hate going to your in-house place. They hate it. And the people hate working there. And what's crazy is we work with a few in-house agencies that just bring the work to us.
Well, yeah. And I can already imagine why.
Yeah.
But let's call it what it is. I have yet to ever hear of anyone bringing work creative in-house because we can do it so much better than anyone else,
right,
if we bring it in-house.
So true. And, you know, we are doing it. Our production and creative are all built into one for the right reasons. And those right reasons are to serve the idea better. We are connected from the beginning. You'll never see anyone in an agency with an in-house production studio sort of go into the production studio and, like, hey, grab the editor who's freelancing here for the next 2 weeks and bring him into the creative process and let's work on this together. Never. It's completely separated and it's its own thing. Right. And it comes with all of its own problems and inefficiencies and, you know, holding companies and this and that and all the things that agencies sort of struggle with to make work. And inexperience is another big one, I think, they have in sort of in-house agencies. A lot of, like, the top talent knows that it's just a factory in there and they're just going to grind you out and they don't go there.
Well,
I do, but that being said, I do believe there is a place for production in-house. I think it's for this sort of day-to-day, maybe it's for the pitching work for here and there, just the sort of things that need to get done. I just don't think it's a solution for doing great work. And if I ran a huge agency with a big holding company, I would look at things very differently. And I would say, instead of starting an in-house production, why don't we make really close partnerships with five or six ones that all offer something differently, and then we work together throughout these years to make really great work. And I think they would find way more efficient, like, money in there and, like, better work, you know, in places that their creatives can really sort of want to work with.
Well, when you think of the reason that someone might say, let's create an in-house creative services department or something, and often the real thing that's trying to be someone's after is efficiency.
Yeah.
In some level, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reminded of something Blair Ann said to me on an earlier podcast when he and I were talking about this trend as well. And he said, efficiency is the enemy of innovation because innovation is inherently wasteful.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because to innovate, you have to try, you have to explore, you have to say, what about this? What about this? What about this?
Totally.
That's really the opposite of efficiency. Efficiency says, this is the answer, just go make it and shut up.
Yeah, that's great. No, that's very interesting.
And so when you go out of house, I think maybe it helps clients to recognize we're going out of house not for efficiency, for innovation.
Yeah.
And if we go to a shop like Versus, those people are going to do something. They're going to innovate. They're going to do something different that we couldn't do ourselves.
We'll show you. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we'll show you what you didn't even know was possible because we understand the entire process better than anybody of how to get it done. You know, I always say when you know the box, it's a lot easier to think outside of it. And when you're starting, you know, with that production and creative in mind as one, you know the box and you can just rip the walls off it and push it and go farther than anybody on it. Agencies or brands come to us and say, like, what's possible with this budget? I say, all right, then no problem. I can show you like unlimited possibilities with this budget, you know, like because we're thinking of that idea plus that production as one. I think that's like really important. And I'm fumbling through it. But I think it's important to think about execution and ideation as one thing because they really go together. And you start to understand like ideas that you didn't even know you could have because you're starting to understand how things are made or why they're made or where you can save time and where you can save money and where it's best to sort of put all your creative energy here because you can do something else here, whatever it is.
Now, what was the line about the box? I got to borrow that
well,
one. That is so good.
Because when you know the box, it's a lot easier to think outside of it. And that's something I say that to clients in every meeting and every screening and everything. Like, you know, we understand the limitations of your job. And I love having limitations on jobs. You know, I said in an interview with Shutterstock once, like, you know, if you had your budget has $5 million and access to Kanye, of course you're going to come up with some crazy idea. But you've got $100,000 and need to have that same feeling and you have 2 weeks to do it. Like, let's see how good of a creative you are now. That's what separates a good creative from a great creative is knowing, like, how to think outside of that box within these, like, limitations. You know, limitations are great. Everyone hates the job where they say, well, we don't know what to do. What should we do? Everyone wants that little nugget, that little something to work towards. And if that little something just happens to be budget, great. Let's work from there.
Yeah, my worst project I was ever given in college as an industrial designer was design whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a curse. It was the worst.
Or you're at a studio and like, all right, guys, we have like a down week coming in. Let's do a project for the like an internal project for the studio.
Right.
Everyone looks around at each other and we're like, all right, let's put a pin in this.
Yeah.
Like, all right, we'll think about something a little bit later.
Yeah. So here's a box. Here's a box that I would, if I had just met you, I would make an assumption. Oh, Versus, you're right here in Manhattan. You probably do a ton of agency work. Sure, you do some broadcast work for TV networks and so forth. But that would be your bread and butter. And that's where the line would end.
Yeah.
Okay. But you guys, at some point, started working brand direct.
Mm-hmm.
Which to me is very, very interesting because that takes way more intention.
Yeah, we do a lot of brand work. We do a lot of work directly with brands and it's great work and it's, you know, really fulfilling and really, you know, there's a lot to own creatively in there and I think it works. We do a lot of work with agencies. I love working with agencies. I love working with creative people. And to be honest, agencies do a lot of the heavy lifting before you get there. And working with a brand requires a lot of heavy lifting and a lot of lead and time that I think a lot of people don't understand.
Well, that's why I admire, right, all that intention I talk about is you don't wake up one day and do a pitch to an agency and win a spot. And then the next day, oh, now I'm going to go work for brand X.
Right.
It's just a very different conversation. It's a very different sales cycle and so forth. It takes a lot of intention. Was that something, like when you and your partners came together and said, hey, we're all on the same page, was that even part of the equation? Like, hey, let's...
Yeah, a big part. I think, you know, and one thing I think is interesting too, when John and Rob were coming in, John was sort of looking at the work, and we had done work with Vanity Fair. We actually branded Vanity Fair for all of their motion work, and that's something that hasn't been done before in the publishing world. And John's like, I've been thinking a lot about publishers as well. This is very interesting. So we had like a big sort of initiative to push into the publisher world, and we were the only ones doing it, and we did, and we rebranded People, Entertainment Weekly, InStyle, Essence. We did work for Hearst, a lot of work were there. Of course, the Vanity Fair thing, Washington Post as well, we rebranded. All that kind of work to bring these publishers into sort of this digital first sort of motion world. Mm. And we show them like, yes, we get your brand is here, but let us show you how to build a package and how to rebrand and how to really do this for you to be a content first sort of company. And, you know, from there, we even launched the People TV, which is like People's OTT network. We helped them launch and brand that to a big news organization that we're now branding as well and like showing and like bringing them along. So like it's that thinking. And then from there, it's like, okay, cool. The publisher world is good. It's stalled out a little bit. You know, they're figuring themselves out. It's a tough business to be in. Then we sort of started focusing energy on like, what else is out there? And then brands, of course. I mean, it's, you know, it's really no secret that the brands are really tired of the inefficiencies from agencies. And they'll always have their place, of course. But I think we're seeing brands reach out to us directly and just say like, you know, we're on a per project basis. Let's work on projects together. And we love that. You know, it'd be great to get an AOR, of course, of a brand. But to be honest, I don't think we want that headache. That's a lot of work to maintain. And I think you start to become dependent and sucked into that AOR world. And your studio starts to become a little bit something different than you sort of set out to be. You know, we like the per project sort of world with brands.
Yeah, there's a hustle that never goes away, right? Yeah. On a per project basis. I think in a way that dream of the AOR and the big retainer is really our human crave for certainty.
It is. And you know, I'm glad you said that. Like, I think every studio out there is just wanting that certainty so bad, and there is absolutely none. And I think a good point sort of in Versus that I was able to sort of let that go was a really big moment for me as like a studio owner. And as a creative, like, next year is going to be a start over. We're going to hit the button and we're going to start right over. Every month is a start over. And if you start realizing that and loving that and accepting that the uncertainty is what's so great about this, then you're going to really start looking at things differently. Like, embrace that. Embrace that you have no idea where your next work is coming from, because that'll keep you hustling for sure.
You and I both have this impish grin on our faces, because I think it was maybe over dinner a couple weeks ago when we were in our 20th Montenegro.
Yeah.
But we were talking about this idea of being comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Right? And there is a certain magic. And I think this is maybe, and I hear this as your encouragement maybe to even your peers in the industry out there, that don't, the trade-offs that come with that certainty might kill, in effect, the golden goose.
Yeah.
Like in your case, it sounds like that ability to every year, every month, hit that reset button and say, okay, it starts over. It feels like we're starting from scratch. And as much as I don't like that, It does create this hunger, this appetite, this energy.
Absolutely.
How else are you going to get that energy?
Yeah. You know, and it's obviously not a complete reset. The relationships that we've built are really, really strong and very long lasting relationships. And, you know, we have true partners. We're not just clients or vendors. We're true partners to everyone we work with. And we've never had just a one-off with anyone. So we know that, you know, we have some sort of stability in the clients that we have, but we never depend on that ever. We don't depend on anything, just ourselves.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. All right. So when you look into the future, some of the stuff you were saying about publishing, I couldn't help but wonder, wait, are you talking about broadcast?
Broadcast, yeah.
Right?
So we do broadcast. And, you know, I don't come from the broadcast world. John and Rob do. So it was kind of new to me when we were, like, talking about when we came in and we get a project, I'd be like, what do they want this for? Like, what do you mean we're going to take their brand package and we got to create these mortises? I'm like, what is all this? What is this shit? And I had no idea. Like, I just don't come from that world.
Right. That's an elevator and a bumper and a tune-in and
exactly,
and a snipe and a...
Which is exciting for me because, like, oh, wow, I think I can bring a different level of thinking to this. Mm-hmm. And I think we did, and I love the broadcast work, and I love the people that we work with on there. It's different, and it's in some ways it's a little bit more creative work. In other ways, it's a little bit more scary when you go to take broadcast meetings. To be honest, like just the state of the industry.
That's kind of what I was curious about was those similar challenges that you saw come in publishing.
Yeah,
that those challenges that are also there in broadcast. That industry is. We'll say the traditional broadcast space is not growing.
Right.
It's the cheese is moving or it's being sliced thinner and thinner and thinner. And I mean, there's still opportunities there. And it's cool. And
great opportunity. And great opportunities for great work.
Yeah. And for great work. But I'm guessing that your appetite to look beyond broadcast, look beyond agencies and to work with brands is a bit of that. What you described that John said, hey, we gotta be diverse.
We gotta be diverse, yeah.
Gotta be diverse.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's a business move, obviously, but it's also just, you know, a hunger for great creative and working in different capacities as well. You do have to. I know the broadcast world is great. It's fun to be working in it a little bit, and then it's fun to switch over to commercials, and then it's fun to switch over for creating a complete campaign from scratch for a brand.
Has it been a shift? Because you said John and Rob coming from more the broadcast world is going after brands and having those kinds of conversations. That's obviously been some sort of a transition for them.
Yeah, for all of us, of course. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And an exciting one. You know, Rob, as the EP, just sort of has the big picture on how everything's working and really, you know, dialing us in, making us sort of like, you know, an efficient, really well-run, great place to go. And Rob does sales as well. I do a ton of sales, and John's obviously the head of sales and does a ton of sales as well. So it's like, you know,
so three out of the four partners are in sales.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Samantha does sales as well. Like here and there, she'll reach out to somebody. You have to be. You can't just be a creative. You can't just be, you know, a producer. You all, if you're a part of the company, you have to be going out there and bringing in work, or at least trying, at least getting out there.
Yeah, I think. There's something about being a partner that sales is obviously such a lifeblood that if I was in partnership with somebody and they said, oh, I don't want to ever touch sales. That's not my thing. Not my thing. I would be questioning, well, do you think this body can we pump something other than blood through it? Because last I checked, this is the lifeblood of the company.
Or if your creative director is like, I don't really like talking to clients. I'm really good at 3D and I come up with great ideas. It's like, yeah, then what use are you? You can't sell yourself. You can't get in front of a room with people. You need to have all of it.
One of my mentors, Dan Sullivan, I remember him teaching me, Joel, your future has nothing to do with you. It's all about other people. And he told me this little example. Mm-hmm. He said, if you spent the rest of your life on a deserted island, what would you accomplish? And I'm like, well, not much, right? Like I build my little hut and try and eke out an existence.
Yeah.
He said, your future, every opportunity, everything is dependent on other people. And you start recognizing, oh, right. So when I get up every day, this whole idea of like, oh, I just want to be creative and make my stuff. It's like, you're only relevant to the extent that you create value for other people. And that is on some level... sales and interacting and collaborating and all that stuff. And
yeah, it's who you meet. It's who you know. You got to get out there. You got to meet everybody. I printed out copies for everybody of that one email you sent about just being out there and just sent it to everybody. And I'm like, you know, and I was like, guys, no one should be here during lunch today. Like, let's all go out and like take a lunch meeting. Like, here's a copy
of
this.
Look at you. Interesting.
You know, it's like, we have to be out there more. And I truly believe that. Like, you know, you want to be working with big brands, where are all the like CMOs hanging out? Like, go there, find it out, be a stalker in a sense, like make it happen. Get that physical like introduction with somebody because it's way more than an email will get you. Sure, an email could get you in the door and here and there. It can only go so far. I think you've really got to be on the scene and be out there more. And it's tough. And I'm guilty of not being out there enough here, you know, as well. But it's tough when you're like also so busy that you can't get out there. You know, like, I don't know. It's that trade-off. So,
right. Well, this does lead, it does lead to the feast or famine cycle. But I remember you gave me this one example when we had dinner of you intentionally went to wherever it was here in Manhattan, knowing that this big cat, I don't know if it was an agency guy or something.
Yeah, I walk by the same agency every day on the way to work, and I wait out there 15 minutes just to like see if people I know are going to be walking the door to say hello. Yeah, I do that. Still do that.
I think
it's
that
out my way, and it's like 10, 15 minutes out of my time, and I know like 8 people in there that are pretty high up in the agency, and it's a nice way to say, hey, how you doing? And then I can follow up with an email. It's that poke, physical poke.
But dude, that the fact that you're willing to go to those lengths still,
yeah,
right? It says something to this inner drive and tenacity that you have, that you think, okay, I'm going to walk this way to the office because I can stop by that office and the odds are really good I'm going to bump into somebody, and that little personal interaction is incredibly meaningful.
Yeah.
I just love that. Well,
in sales, you're always looking for just that one way to just say hi, you know, just like something to be like, oh, a little nugget, just to like kind of just to remind them that you're here. And
well, sure.
I think it's important. Yeah. And that's, you know, nothing has changed from, you know, the fake WeWork that we were at till now. It's still straight everyday hustle and still thinking. It's on a larger scale, which is nice. And I think we're thinking bigger, which is really great, and have a lot more confidence in sort of what we can do. And in the beginning, I knew that we were going to be successful and strong and really go for it. So I'm not surprised to get to where we are. But now I'm like, I'm thinking way bigger.
So when you look into that,
but with the same size studio.
Yeah, yeah. So when you look into the future, what gets you excited about where you're headed? Or is it like, I don't know, I'm just going to get up and hustle every day and it'll come to me.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, I'm excited about the work. I'm excited to see like what work we're going to be doing. You know, that's what excites me, is like the work, really. Like, you know, I know I talked about our potential, but like I'm excited to just seeing how far we can take versus and how much great work we can do. And really importantly to us, how many great partners can we make, and how can we like help other people and, you know, keep their jobs and be proud of the work they're doing as well. The partnerships is a really, really big deal to us, and they're very special to us. And the clients that we have are friends that like we have made, and that we like, you know, they trust in us and we trust in them, and we do work together.
Well, I hear that optimism coming out of where things are going. I also hear in you a certain confidence that you may not have all the answers in terms of, oh, 3 years from now, I want to be here, or 5 years, I want to be
No, we never think
there,
that
right? You don't really think that way.
Never.
But instead, you have this confidence of we've seen so much, we've done so much, and every time the challenge has come to us, we've risen to meet it.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you'll do that tomorrow, and you'll do
absolutely.
It next week, and you'll do it next month.
Keep it coming. There's nothing we can't handle.
Right?
So, you know, there's nothing. And I think we position ourselves in a way where if, you know, the economy drops out and we're looking around, I think we're still going to be fine. Absolutely.
You'll figure it out.
Smart. Yeah, yeah, we'll figure
you'll
it out.
Adapt, you'll evolve.
And we'll see opportunities in that, and we'll take them.
Well, there's that.
There's tons of opportunities in the economy dropping out, by the way, especially for a studio like ours.
Well, yeah, and what do you mean by that? What?
Because I mean, we're
naturally
nimble.
People would think, oh, no.
We're nimble. We're efficient. We're highly creative. I think there's still going to be advertising. There's still going to be a need to do it. And when everyone else gets fired, we're going to be standing there like, yeah, we got you on this. No problem. You know, we don't ever lower our prices. All we do is raise our value.
Mm. We don't ever lower our prices. We just raise our value. Yeah, there's a mentality there that's big, because competing based on price is obviously that race to the bottom.
Nothing makes me more sad than seeing like somebody going out there and doing it for cheap and just killing themselves and making no money on it because they think they're going to get in with this client or that, and they have no idea they're always going to be seen as that to their client, as this cheap solution. And you're also devaluing our industry, which I really, really hate. There's a responsibility as an owner of like a creative studio to the industry as well. You can't just be sort of, you know, on your own little world, like taking money where you can get it and kind of pulling it out, you have a responsibility to the industry to maintain standards and to maintain these prices and keep everybody honest. And what's a bummer is a lot of places don't do that, especially the smaller ones, that these 2-3 people shops that sort of start up like, I know, I've got a camera, I go out and do it. Like, I can't believe you're charging $100,000 for that. Like, that's, it used to be $300,000 5 years ago. Like, you know, you're saying you can do it for 30.
Right.
Like, so 30 is now the standard. And that's what, just because your worth to yourself is low doesn't mean we have to sort of abide by that as well. And we don't. And we don't compromise. And we're happy to say no to a job that, you know, but we're always happy to say we have a solution for your budget. And that's where the value comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And that value is based on experience and just our thinking. And that's really important to us. Like, we're sort of very forward thinking in what we can offer somebody. And we think a little bit more on it.
Well, you and I are kindred spirits on that mission, because the years that I ran my studio, the trend was the same, right? Like, in a way, nothing's changed.
Right.
Everyone likes to say, oh, budgets are going down and the requirements keep going up. And I'm like, yeah, it sounds like 2002.
Yeah.
Right? The people that were there felt the same pressures. It's the same old, same old, same old. The thought that I like is what you were expressing, and that is, we as creative entrepreneurs, if we do come together and we do build community, I want to give the younger generation permission to charge what they're worth.
Yeah, well said.
To create value and to be rewarded, and that currency of respect we talked about earlier. And I know you're the kind of guy that you will get in front of a room full of other owners over dinner and just tell it like it is.
Yeah.
But in a way, give everybody permission. Like, look, let's not compete based on price. Let's compete based on value.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, that's a very optimistic view. I get it. There's always realities. But if we can give the next generation permission to charge the $100 for that project.
Yeah.
And let's compete on our ideas, on our execution, on our reputation, whatever those things are. That's cool. Because I would much rather see you lose a job to a competitor, not based on price.
Right.
Based on something else.
Me too.
Not based on price.
No, me too. Me too. I don't mind losing a job if to a better idea. But it is frustrating losing it to just money, and that happens a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not to us, to be honest. We don't tend to lose jobs, but I think, you know, to give an example, we were up against three other companies from a broadcast company. We were up against three other companies strictly based on price, and they had a set price. It was like $160,000. And they're like, that's the money they have. So all the bids were the same, but they weren't asking for any creative or anything. And then it went to somebody else. And we were kind of just like, what the hell was that? Like, oh, we're triple bidding at three companies. We have $160,000. That's it. So can you send bids? And we go, okay, do you want a creative? She's like, no. I'm like, well, what are you basing it on? He goes, well, the bid. I was like, the bid's the same. We were all just like looking around, like, what is this? We're scratching our heads like, okay. I mean, you know, at that point, you sort of start looking and say, are we a check bid? Are we,
right?
You know, is this going in-house? What's going on with this job? Which is a very important thing, I think, to learn, that you can only learn
from
experience.
Do you think they were, in reality, looking at the portfolios?
I think they might have been looking at the portfolios, but they never
asked.
That's
fine, but just tell me.
No, that's fine, but when you don't ask for, like, a pared-down link, because obviously not all of our work is on the site, it's sort of like you're judging by the site, which I think, you know, which is a whole other conversation, like, what should your site look like and how, you know, blah, blah, blah. But
right.
Just like, I don't think there's any right answer to. But, yeah, just a weird, you know, you come across these weird things. I think, you know, Rob and myself and John, I think we have enough experience to know when we're sort of being led down the wrong path. And we always ask, and we are not afraid to ask, who's in this bid? Is this a check bid? What's the actual budget? Is there a favorite going into the creative? We ask all these questions up front, right away, so we know exactly what we're getting into before we jump into it. And if everything seems good and we've got a chance, great. We, you know, recently, we didn't get invited to pitch for this agency for a project that was perfect for us. Like a big 3D project that we really loved the ideas, and there's three people already in it, and we just simply asked, can we be the fourth? Like, that's it. Like, you know, it won't cost you anything as a favor to us, since we did a job for you and helped you out. Like, you're now your payback favor to us is just put us in as a fourth. And we won that job, and we knew we were going to, without any like just complete confidence we were going to win the job. And we've been now doing that same job for the last like, you know, 6-7 projects, and we're tight with the agency. And it's like, when you know you got it, go for it.
So you asked to be brought in, and you were the fourth bid, and you won it, and you won it.
Yeah, we asked. So we did a job with the agency before, it was not a favor job. It was a job that was very challenged, and say, we're going to do this. We'll bring the value to this job. But, you know that this is like a favor in a sense that you'll always a little bit want on this one. And so we're quick to cash those in, and that cash in was like for a fourth, and they gave it to us. And now we're like great, great, great partners, and they're some of the greatest people we work with.
Well, one thing I want to just put a little asterisk on, because what I heard you say back there about when we go into a proposal, a pitch, what have you, we're not afraid to ask these questions.
Yeah.
And man, I love that so much, because you know what I take away from that is, oh, you sound like an expert.
Yeah.
Like an expert, a doctor, for example, is not afraid to ask you, okay, you know, what's your height? What's your weight? What's your blood pressure? What's your whatever? Like, he's going to ask questions in order to really understand the situation, diagnose, and come up with the most awesome solution.
Yeah.
And if a doctor is afraid to ask you questions because he might lose the job, like
I know. Well, so sure.
Do you want to go to this guy? But I think that likewise, that I wish the industry as a whole would embrace that. Like, let's just call clients out.
You have to.
Yeah. Let's just ask them point blank. How many people are bidding on this? Who else is bidding? Who are the other companies bidding? And when they start doing this whole, oh, I can't really share that and this and the other, you say, okay, well, we're going to pass on this one.
Totally. You should.
It's our policy to only work with companies that reveal this kind of information and so forth.
Like, yeah. Or if you're like, can I get on a phone with the creatives so we can put together our treatment? Like, no, no need for that. You know, and it's like, okay, so there's like, all right, then let's talk about what's really going on here.
Right.
You've got to sort of learn these like telltale signs, and then just you're right. You have to just ask. You have to say, okay, so what's your budget? And they go, well, just tell us what the no. You have a budget in mind.
We don't want to limit your creativity, Justin.
Exactly. You need to know that box to think outside of it, right? So, like I said before, like, what's your budget? Now my treatment is going to like blow away everybody's, because I know how to do this in a better way than anybody else, and that's thinking like, you know, knowing the box and thinking outside. So. It's that, like, you know, obviously, who are the other people that you're bidding against? Is one of them in-house? Great. Is it leaning towards in-house? Yes. A publicist has to work with their in-house place. P&G almost like makes them. So knowing that you're going against their in-house place, what's it going to take to win this? That's what I ask. I go, so what is it going to take to win this? He goes, well, the creatives, it's coming down to the creative. And sometimes they say, honestly, it's coming down to the budget at this point. Like, it's up to me. So it's like, okay, great.
So helpful to know that information
in
advance rather than guessing. And I actually love...
I ask the creatives too. I go, what are you guys looking for that's going to win this? Like, let's be honest with each other right away. Like, well, we're excited to be on it. Like, we really, really go for it in pitches. And that's why I think we've lost 2 pitches out of like 60 this year. So it's like, we really, 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 really go for it and like put together like thinking and boards and ideas. And we go sometimes way too far, but that's why we're so successful at it.
But what I like is the work that you've done before the pitch. Like, you've done your homework. You've asked the tough questions.
Yeah.
So in effect, what I hear you doing is, let's do our research. Let's not be afraid to ask the tough questions, so that when we decide, are we in, we can go all in.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, completely. Yeah, because...
You're not guessing.
No, because we go all in, so we want to know that we're doing it for the right reasons. We don't want to like... do all this work, and then it's like, oh, really great treatment, and then you don't hear back for like 2 weeks, and it's like, oh, yeah, that ended up going in-house, or, you know, it went to whoever.
Here's a line that someone taught me that is a really good one, in case this is helps you on your mission, as you're talking to clients, and they want to be coy and kind of push you off, and, oh, I can't really share that, and I don't want to limit your creativity. The line I like to say is, well, look, obviously we're not in the proposal writing business here.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what we're here to do.
Yeah.
Because sometimes clients, you feel like they're asking you to be like, oh, well, you guys write proposals all the time, right?
Right, right.
And you're like, no, we're a creative studio. Proposals are like a necessary evil, but they're just a means to an end.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And bids too. Like, Rob spends a lot of time on a bid and very carefully thinks about how he's going to do it. And it's like, for this one project that we won, a really big project, but he went through like 30 different iterations of a bid because it was so involved, and another agency got involved, and we're like, it's like, I mean, that in itself is just, that's like a $20,000 job right there, yeah, all the work you did.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then that's, you know, that's, you don't charge for that. I mean, I'd love to be able to, and it happens twice a year that we'll get money for a pitch fee. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Even when you get them, they're kind of a pittance, right?
Yeah, $5,000 or something, which is nice because then you're able to sort of just take all that $5,000 and just throw it into like making style frames or something.
Right.
But there's spend it all. If you're not spending all that $5,000, then I don't know what you're thinking.
Right.
Like if you get a pitch fee, spend every dollar.
Oh, for
sure. And make
it
happen. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, usually that's the license to spend double or triple that.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, at least it's not zero.
Yeah.
It's tough to navigate that. But man, you guys obviously have an incredible win ratio.
Yeah.
And I chalk it up to a lot of things, but I really love the fact that you are not afraid to be the expert, to ask the tough questions, to lay the groundwork so that when you go all in, you know, hey, our odds are really high because we know what we're doing here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, true. And we share that brief that comes in with the whole team as well. It's not just myself and Rob looking at it. Like, let's get questions from our art director, from like our lead animator, from everybody, from the editor to everybody. Let's like talk about it together. And that's what we do. We really like look at it together and say, like, what do you think about this? What ideas, like, what could we bring to this that's different? How long is it going to take? Like, is it worth the money? Like, you know, we talk about everything from just logistics to creative ideas. And I think, you know, that's another reason why we're successful. And I think another main reason is we don't hire, like, interns, and we don't hire anybody except for, like, senior top-level talent. We're not set up to bring in interns, which bums me out a lot because I came up as an intern, but we're just not set up. So it's like top talent only. That's what you get, the best in their field. That's it. That's who they are. They're awesome. They're amazing. And, you know, they are Versus, and I thank them every day. Like, they are who we're only successful because of all the people that work with us.
Well, you've got a killer team, obviously building a really strong reputation. I've been having a blast watching from the sidelines, seeing all you guys have accomplished. So I'm proud to call you a friend and excited to continue cheering you on. So congrats on everything on the journey so far.
Well, thank you. And thanks for, you know, keeping us inspired out there and honest. I know it's not easy.
I'll keep those weekly emails coming.
They matter.
When I hear you printing them out, I'm like, wow.
Yeah, they matter.
I'm honored.
Or just like the LinkedIn post of we are a blank studio. That's, oh my God, that one hit hard.
my positioning meme.
Yeah, your positioning meme. I was like, I opened up another browser window and looked at our website. I was like, all right, we got to rethink this. Like meeting next, like tomorrow, like, we just got called out.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thanks, Justin. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Rev Thinking Podcast. For more information on upcoming accelerators, events, or to learn how RevThink advises creative entrepreneurs like you, connect with us at revthink.com.
I want to tell you about a place to connect that you might not know about. It's our online community called Rev Community. It's a great place to get to know other creative business owners like yourself, to share some thought leadership and read other encouragement, to be challenged in this new marketplace, new technology, ideas, economic trends. And it's a place to research. Check out many of the resources we have online, our videos, and of course, this podcast. Join us today at revthink.com/community. If you're a creative studio owner, feel free to join us today at revthink.com/community. I look forward to seeing you there.